Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Packers-Eagles game week. We finally made it. Should be a really fun week of discussion. Tomorrow we're going to go over an Eagles scouting report, going to have some special guests on. So make sure to clear your calendars for that and make sure you're checking out the Pack-A-Day Podcast 365 days a year. Like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. And of course, check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships as well. Today, what we're going to be doing is going over the most improved Packers through the course of this offseason, which I think is a really fun discussion because I do think there have been more than a handful of players that have really shown what they are capable of, that they have improved, and they can be even more impactful this upcoming season. That being said, I want to give a disclaimer here. This is based off of training camp, mini camp, OTA, and preseason, right? This time of year does have the propensity to be a little bit of fool's gold from time to time. Now, of course, what we want to see is improvement. We want to see players that are really working hard, that are working on their craft, that are mastering it, getting better, and showing those signs of growth so that they could be more impactful in this upcoming season. But we've all seen and known those players that have been unbelievable in camp and in preseason, and then regular season rolls around, and it doesn't always necessarily carry it over. So I am not saying that all 12 players that we're going to go over today are guaranteed to be leaps and bounds better than what they were either coming into the year or going back to last year. But what I do think we've seen is true legitimate growth, that the process is better, that they are getting better as players, and that they could theoretically be more impactful this upcoming year. So I have 12. I'm going to go from number 12 to number one, number one being the most improved in my opinion. And then we'll kind of recap it at the end. But I'll start with number 12, which might be a little bit of an interesting one, which is why he's at number 12. It's not somebody that theoretically could have improved from last year to this year because he's a rookie. But I want to talk about Jacob Monk anyway. And for those of you who listened to yesterday's episode, I mentioned a sort of like pump. Some people need to pump the brakes a little bit or maybe jumping a little bit too far and saying like, this guy's going to be a stud day one. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think there still needs to be a little bit of growth and improvement from Jacob Monk before he gets to anywhere near that level. Let's just see what he can do as a, you know, backup number seventh-ish offensive lineman first. And if he can fill in a pinch, and then we can kind of go from there. But what I will say about Jacob Monk is that I've loved the improvement from the start of OTAs up until the end of camp and preseason. And it reminded me a little bit of what I saw from Tucker Kraft last year, where you could see Tucker Kraft come in OTAs and minicamp and just head was spinning. And by the end of camp, you could see that there was a legitimate progression. And then that just even took off once he got playing time in the regular season. I think we could see a similar thing with Jacob Monk, where again, head was spinning a little bit, OTAs and minicamps. By the end of camp, he looked like a serviceable player. And if he does get that playing time midway through the year, I think he could come in and be a contributor. And I don't want to necessarily just say, well, just because he wasn't here last year doesn't mean he can't be the most improved or anything like that. I do think it's been a legitimate amount of improvement that he's deserving of recognition here. And I think that is always a fun thing when you see a rookie come in and maybe have some of those rookie moments early on, which are important moments to have. Nobody, at least the vast majority of players, don't come in and just be unbelievable from day one. There takes a little bit of a growth curve, and you just love seeing that natural progression of him through the entire course of the offseason from the day he was drafted up until literally right now. Now, again, what he ends up being on game days, and the hope is that we don't have to see Jacob Monk this regular season. The hope is that Rashid Walker, Elton Jenkins, Josh Myers, either Sean Ryan or Jordan Morgan and Zach Tom, specifically those six, are just really good and they don't have injuries and we don't need to see the number 7, 8, 9 offensive linemen at any point this year. but it does give me a little bit more faith that if Green Bay does need to get that far into their depth chart, that they might have a player here that could come in and be serviceable. Maybe more of like a Lucas Patrick. I think Monk is going to be better than a Lucas Patrick, but somebody that can just come in and give you solid snaps. He's not going to be the reason that you win games, but he's not going to be the reason that you lose games. And if you've got a number 7 or number 8 offensive lineman that is not the reason that you lose games, it may sound crazy, but that is a leg up on the vast majority of teams in the NFL. There are teams that have starters that will be losing games for them because they are not good enough to protect their quarterback. So this is still a positive development. It's going in the right direction. And again, hopefully we don't have to see Jacob Monk, but if we do, I'm excited to see what he can do as a rookie because of all the progress that he's shown through the course of this offseason. Number 11, out of nowhere, is Eric Wilson. Eric Wilson came off the practice squad, I believe, from the Saints last year, basically brought in to be a core special teams guy. And he is approaching I think he's either 30 or about to turn 30. He's one of the oldest players on the team. He hasn't really played any significant defensive snaps in a while. And you come into this offseason thinking, well, Quay Walker is going to be a huge part of the defense. Isaiah McDuffie has the familiarity with Jeff Hafley. You go and draft Edgerrin Cooper in the second round. You double down by getting Tyron Hopper in the third round. And then, yeah, you bring back Eric Wilson, but you're thinking, you know, number 5 is probably the best you're thinking. And he's going to probably have to beat out some undrafted guys and Christian Welch and everything like that. Is he even going to do that? Because he's probably just a journeyman 30-year-old special teams guy at this point. And instead, Eric Wilson goes out and says, screw that. I'm going to be your starting base linebacker. Now, we don't have confirmation of that yet. We could get to week one, and it could be something where, if you remember week one, all of a sudden Chris Barnes was the starter, 4 or 5 years ago now, and nobody saw that coming. So maybe it isn't Eric Wilson as the starter in base. Maybe it's Tyron Hopper. Maybe Edgerrin Cooper is healthy enough to be that guy. Maybe we just don't even see any base defense. That could be something that happens as well. But just the fact that through the entirety of this offseason, not only has he earned those reps with the number ones, and it seems like he's going to be the linebacker with the ones in a 4-3 base defense, but he has looked the part. And again, I can only imagine how energized he must be as somebody who has probably even to himself thought, yeah, you know what? I'm probably just going to be a special teams guy from here on out. And he embraced that and became a great special teams player. But to get that opportunity to maybe play, even if it's 10 to 15 snaps per game on defense, and then go out and really play well all throughout the offseason. I mean, he's been all over the place. There have been multiple stops in the backfield or at the line of scrimmage that Eric Wilson has made that has made me do a double take. And the unique and kind of fun thing about Wilson is anytime he's gotten in the game, which was limited last year for Green Bay, but when he has, he's looked good. He doesn't look out of place, which is why I loved him coming in as like a potential number 5 linebacker. If you've got a number 5 linebacker, I don't care what his age is, that he can be a core special teamer and in a pinch give you potential solid linebacker snaps where he doesn't look out of place, man, does that have value. But now you bump him up a couple slots and say, actually, he can even be a starting caliber linebacker. And that improvement at age 30, I would never have expected. If you would have told me 3-4 months ago that we were talking about most improved Packers through the course of the offseason, I would have never thought that 30-ish year old Eric Wilson would be on that list, but he is deserving to be on that list. He's deserving to be with the starters in 4-3 so far. We'll see if he can maintain that spot. It's not going to be easy to hold off a second round pick and a third round pick that you invested heavy resources in for that number 3 linebacker spot. And especially because it'll also be easy knowing that this is a 30-year-old, you know, that doesn't have a ton of long-term upside, that is also can, you know, just be your core special teamer, and you can kind of take him off of defense and have him focus on special teams. That's probably going to be an easy move for them to make at some point. But Eric Wilson is doing his best to make that decision extremely difficult because he keeps playing well and showing that he deserves to be a starter in that 4-3 defense. Number 10, Aaron Mosby. Talk about a player who went from a little bit of a tweener, inside linebacker, outside linebacker type, you know, special teams guy, would maybe be a practice squad candidate coming into this year. You looked at the numbers again. You're looking at Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, LVN, Kingsley Enagbare, Brenton Cox as the huge mini camp. And like Keyshawn Banks, remember too, is a guy who was elevated last year at the end of the year ahead of Mosby, got playing time ahead of Brenton Cox. So you can't discount him entirely either. You go get a guy like Deslin Alexander who ends up making it on the practice squad. There's a lot of defensive ends. Add into the fact that They also experimented a bit with Colby Wooden playing defensive end. Carl Brooks has the ability to play defensive end. And you just start chopping up the numbers and you're trying to figure out a way to keep Aaron Mosby, and it feels almost like an impossibility. But he just goes out, has a phenomenal camp, consistently was getting pressure on the quarterback. You heard his name all throughout camp and in preseason, and then cements it with a beautiful third preseason game where he gets the sack fumble that results in an Anthony Johnson Jr. touchdown and a big interception. And that's one of those guys that was probably like, you know, should we keep this guy? Should we not? And maybe they were already leaning towards keeping him. And then he just says, yeah, you're keeping me because this is the stuff that I'm capable of. And I do think, you know, sometimes what happens with a player like this, who is a little bit more of a kind of a journeyman slash, you know, just practice squad guy at this point, you know, there sometimes needs to be something that gives him that little bit more of an advantage. And I think that something for Mosby is the fact that this is the first time really where he has been a dedicated edge player, that they have focused him in as a 4-3 defensive end, let him put on the right weight and the right size and strength that he needs to play that position, and just let him go and not sort of try to, you know, wiggle him back and forth between positions or wonder what he's going to be. Just focus on defensive end. He looks like he is really honed in on that. That he's put together a pass rush plan. He's got good burst, good speed, as we saw on that forced fumble. If you leave him unblocked, he is going to be a blur into the backfield. And I think he, well, probably not likely to make a super big impact because of all the defensive ends that are on the team already. If you do need him in a pinch, I think he can be somebody that comes in and contributes and even maybe makes some plays for you, which is a pretty big statement for somebody who looked like maybe a practice squad guy at best and now is a legitimate 53-man roster player. We finally made it. It's opening week, our fantasy drafts are done, our pick'em selections are in, and the last thing we need to do is get our prize pick selections made for this week's incredible slate of action. And to kick off football season, one Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on prize picks every week in September. That's right, only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. 4 weeks of free W's. Don't miss the deal on prize picks because it's gone when September ends. What I love about Prize Picks is that they always put their members first, so all withdrawals are fast, safe, and secure. And when my picks hit, I can get my money in as quick as 15 minutes. So obviously, yes, I'm going to be playing Caleb Williams to start the season, and I'll also be going with the newest Packers star running back, Josh Jacobs, against the Eagles in Brazil as well. And the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time. Number 9, Malik Heath. This is somebody who we saw last year have moments, right? He can be a possession guy. He can win over the middle of the field. He can be a really good blocker. He can kind of be that goon that Matt LaFleur talks about in the sort of image of Alan Lazard. But I think the question was going to be, is there anything else there? Is there any little extra where we see the upside and maybe the playmaking ability? And this is where I saw Malik Heath take a step. And first, I want to shout out what Matt LaFleur said, because was it Matt LaFleur or Goody? I forget. I think it was actually Goody who said that he has the incredible ability to make big plays in big moments. I'm paraphrasing there. It was something to that extent, where, you know, he basically is saying that he, you know, in the clutch, Malik Heath comes up big. And that is a huge statement for a young second year UDFA who seemed at a moment like he was maybe in a battle for that number six spot. And then I think what we also saw is his ability to get deep a little bit better. In that first preseason game, there was the ability to get deep. The quarterback, unfortunately, did not hit him on the play. There were other plays where he did get open deep, caught some passes, both in training camp and in preseason. So I think his ability to show that he maybe has a little bit more of that extra gear that can make some of those plays down the field, I think that opens up even more for Malik Heath. I think he has shown that he's a more well-rounded wide receiver. He did really well in the one-on-ones when they were in training camp. So it just feels like he is a little bit more well-versed, has a little bit more of an idea how to stack corners and get open deep, how to use that physical imposing body to gain a little bit more separation. And while he probably is buried a little bit as the number six wide receiver and might not be active on game days, he's another incredible depth piece that if you need Malik Heath as a number three, number four wide receiver at any point this year, you are not fretting it. You know that he has the ability to do it. And I think he can go up and put numbers in that situation. I don't think this is one of those, you know, Geronimo Allison, Jared Boykin, which are both solid players for what they were, you know, able to become as UDFAs. I think Malik Heath has a little bit more to give than either of those players do. Maybe a little bit more to an Allen Lazard type extent. And if he can become that next Allen Lazard style player, what a find he would be and what a development that would be over the course of maybe this year, the next year, and the following year as he's still on that rookie contract. Number eight, Quay Walker. And this is one of those, again, I don't want to say that, oh my goodness, Quay's living up to his first round pick potential and he's going to be an unbelievable linebacker in year three and look at the huge jump that he's making. I don't want to go that far. But do I believe that Quay Walker looks more comfortable in this defense? I do. Do I feel like he is playing more fast, more instinctive football? I do. Do I feel like he's going to have the ability to get sideline to sideline and make a lot of plays both in the running game and the passing game? I do. Do I think there's still going to be mistakes? I do. But I do, I said I do a lot. I feel like we're at the altar here or something, but you get my point. I feel like ultimately he has taken the right steps in the right direction to be a better linebacker, can win in this system, can be their starting Mike, can call all the plays and just be a really good middle linebacker for this team. And he maybe won't ever live up to that top 25 pick or whatever he was in the first round. Maybe he doesn't get a second contract. We're going to have to wait and see. This season will go a long way in determining if his fifth year option gets picked up or not. But I don't care right now. What I care about is him being a really good middle linebacker in this defense. Everything I've seen this offseason would lead me to believe he can be that at minimum. And I'm excited to see specifically in Jeff Hafley's defense what Quay Walker can become. Number seven, very similar conversation. Isaiah McDuffie, the third linebacker that we've already talked about on this list. It just feels like all three of these linebackers are playing so much faster and with so much more freedom than what they did in Joe Barry's defense. It is not a get back and sort of think over things while you're trying to make a play. It is read and react football, see ball, hit ball. And I think that is going to serve all three of these linebackers well. But if there's a linebacker that you saw consistently in the backfield all throughout training camp, it was Isaiah McDuffie. He is flowing to the ball. He knows exactly where to be, exactly where to go. I still think there is going to be some hiccups when it comes to coverage. I don't think he's necessarily going to be a top tier coverage linebacker, which might come into a little bit of a situation as a nickel linebacker. They may need to sort of figure out more ways to get maybe an Edgerrin Cooper on the field in some of the nickel situations. But I think what we know Isaiah McDuffie is a tackling machine who can get to his spots, who can be a really good run defender, who can get off of blocks and go make plays. And I think that's the exact sort of player we're going to see. It definitely feels like he's taking a step. It feels like he's super comfortable, especially already working with Jeff Hafley in this defense. And I don't know, again, what that ceiling is for Isaiah McDuffie, but there's no question to me that he looks improved from even a season ago. Number six, Sean Ryan. And this is one of those where it's not just even a step from last year to this year. It was really a step from beginning of camp till the end of camp. And Sean Ryan, it looked like, was going to lose that starting battle to Jordan Morgan. And to be clear, he still might. Jordan Morgan, either this week or next week or the following week or midway through the season, is probably likely to become the starting right guard. But last year, when we saw Sean Ryan in small doses, you saw some positive things, especially as a run blocker. But on the whole, it was still a little bit disappointing. I thought he was actually worse than John Runyon Jr. in the second half of last year. And I was actually sort of surprised that they didn't just go with John Runyon Jr. full time at the end of the year, like they did at left tackle with Rashid Walker over Yash Nyman. And I was just left wanting a little bit more. And then he comes in and Matt LaFleur makes the out of shape, you know, comments again and wanting to see more consistency out of Sean Ryan, which I don't disagree with. I didn't think he came in and just, you know, showed what he was capable of from day one. But I think the message was sent. I think as soon as Jordan Morgan started to get those starting right guard spots, and I think as soon as Matt LaFleur made some mention of they wanted to see more, I think he really focused in, and I think he got a lot better. And when Jordan Morgan went out, Sean Ryan came in, played really consistent football. I was also really impressed that in a lot of those preseason games and in camp, they played him a lot at center too, and he held up well there. The snaps were good. He didn't look out of place at all, and adding a level of versatility to his game where before he was probably just a right guard, left guard guy, and now he adds center to that. That is going to give him a ton of value on game days as well. There has been a legitimate amount of improvement there. What that means for Sean Ryan in season and if he can stave off Jordan Morgan from becoming the starter, that remains to be seen. But I really do like what he was able to accomplish, especially from beginning to camp to end of camp and really kind of solidifying that right guard spot, at least until Jordan Morgan is ready to take it over. Number five on my list as we get to our top five here is Kadeem Telfert. Man, Kadeem probably came in at the very beginning of OTAs and mini camps, right? Probably behind Zach Tom, Rashid Walker, Jordan Morgan, as he started off as a tackle when he kind of first came in. He played a lot of stuff, but you're probably thinking Jordan might be a tackle coming in. And then you've got, what, Caleb Jones, Luke Tenuta, Travis Glover that they drafted in the fifth round. You know, there's just all of these potential offensive tackles that were on the team. And you're not thinking, yep, Kadeem Telfert is going to come in. And then obviously they go get Andre Dillard as well, that Kadeem Telfort's going to come in and potentially be the true legitimate swing tackle for this team. Now, I don't know that 1,000,000% to be true. And I kind of think it might be Andre Dillard if it's a left tackle injury, and it might be Kadeem Telfert if it's a right tackle injury. I don't even know if Telfort's going to necessarily be active on game days. If it were me, I think I would have him active because I think he has more versatility and can play more positions, left tackle, left guard, right guard. I think he can play four spots and actually liked a lot of the stuff he was doing in minicamp and OTAs when they were trying him out at guard. But either way, even if he's just the ninth offensive lineman and he's not active on game days, going from somebody who was a true UDFA in 2023 to, you know, being a practice squad guy the entirety of the year, never really showing in training camp last year that he was a guy that was potentially going to make the team. Although I did like him. I liked him coming out. I thought he looked developmental. I thought he looked like there was something there to work with. And then to come in this year and really from an early standpoint in training camp, be ahead of Caleb Jones and Luke Tenuta and Travis Glover, and then give Andre Dillard a real run for his money to the point where he might be active ahead of Andre Dillard. You know, that is a pretty big jump from year one to year two for a UDFA you're not expecting anything out of. To me, he was a clear 53-man roster guy. I know some people were, you know, thinking, should he be cut? Should he stay? Can they get him back in the practice squad? To me, it was never really a question. He was that good all throughout camp. And the thing that I liked the most is the more reps he got, the more he felt like he was settling in and getting a level of confidence. And sometimes you see guys like Royce Newman, quite frankly, who you're expecting with more reps, they're going to settle down and it's going to become easier for them. And it just doesn't. And there's other guys like Rashid Walker, where Rashid Walker plays more, settles in more, and it just looks like it's becoming easier and easier. And that's what I saw a little bit out of, not to that same extent, but that's what I saw to Kadeem Telfert, where it felt like he was getting more and more used to the game speed, slowing it down a little bit and becoming more confident in his own abilities. And some of his footwork stuff and the agility and the speed are always going to be a little bit of a question with his size. But man, if he gets you in a phone booth, look out because he is going to maul you. He will throw some people around. Had a great play on the second level where he chased a safety down and then threw him to the ground, which was hilarious. It was an awesome play to watch. He's a fun player. I like his demeanor, and he was very deserving of the spot, which again, coming from UDFA 2023, not expecting anything up until now, a pretty significant jump in 2024. Number four might be an interesting one because this is a former first team and second team all pro. That's Jaire Alexander. I am not saying that this is the best version of Jaire we've ever seen, although I think it's close and it might be. I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, Jaire needed to improve a ton from when he was a first team all pro or show significant signs of improvement from that or anything. But we know Jaire in 2023 was not the Jaire we were used to. And I am more than willing to accept the Joe Barry explanation for that. If that's where you want to explain it away and say he was clearly not happy with the defense, there was a level of just, you know, I think frustration and sometimes maybe even disgust in the secondary of how things were being played. Do I think Jair was being used correctly by Joe Barry? I do not. Whatever it is, if you want to put it all on that, that's fine. I'm totally fine. If you want to put it on Jair, I understand that. I think there are things that Jair, regardless of scheme, regardless of system, could have done and handled a much better job of handling this past year. Okay. But wherever you want to come on that spectrum, whether it's just that he's improving now because it's, or it's easier for him because it's a better defense with a better defensive coordinator. Awesome. Cool. Or whether it's just Jair really getting back to his roots and being the player that we all know that he is capable of being. Awesome. I don't care where you want to put that. It does, and quite frankly, it doesn't matter. The end result is that we want to see the best version of Jair Alexander. And from what I've seen in everything in camp so far, he is locked in. He really looks impressive. He looks like first team All-Pro Jair. That's going to have to carry over into the season. I still want him to play a little bit more of a more physical brand of football, especially as a tackler. But as a coverage guy, regardless of tackling, if he can be, you know, I don't think he's ever going to be a quote-unquote shutdown guy. There's very few of those that have existed in the course of the NFL. But if he can play at the peak of his powers as a big-time coverage guy, you know, on one side of the field, man, is that going to make things so much easier for this defense and for Jeff Hafley. And I think he's right there. I think he has all the ability to be that. And he's been spectacular in camp so far. Hey friends, how would you like to support the podcast and have a chance to earn $500? Well, you can go to bluewirepods.com/survey and complete the Blue Wire audience survey about you and your podcast listening habits for a chance to win a $500 gift card. This survey will help create a better advertising experience for you and audiences, and in turn, help this show. That's bluewirepods.com/survey, where all you have to do is answer some simple questions for a chance to win $500. Make sure to read the full terms and disclaimer, plus complete the survey for a chance to win. That's bluewirepods.com/survey. The link is also in the show notes of this episode. We appreciate it a ton. Number three is Eric Stokes. We're sticking at the cornerback position. This is a player legitimately that I didn't know going into the entire offseason if Green Bay even had any legitimate plans for him. And in hindsight, that might sound crazy. I might say he was a first round pick. He's clearly the starter. Carrington Valentine never really competed for that spot, injury or not even pre-injury. It was Stokes all along. But Eric massively struggled in 2022 prior to the injury, missed all of 2022, the remainder of 2022 with the injury, missed almost all of 2023, save for two games where you could tell he was rusty, but did not play his best football. And then what are you expecting going into 2024? And my point wasn't that, yep, Green Bay should just give up on Eric Stokes or that Eric Stokes is a bad player. That was not my point at any point in time. My point was if Eric came in and had a really bad camp, meaning, and that could have just been completely due to injuries. Like maybe he just wasn't going to be the same guy coming off all of those injuries, or maybe they would have seen the same Eric Stokes in early 2022 that just looked unmotivated and not focused and not playing the part the way he needed to. If he would have come in and had a disastrous training camp, I don't know. First of all, Eric is not the starter. Second, I don't know if he makes the team. The great news is we never have to know. Because Eric came in and had a really good training camp. Now, he got beat maybe as much or more than maybe some of the other corners. That's going to happen in practice. And that's also going to happen, by the way, this season. If Jair is playing the way that we just talked about and Jair's the number one, yeah, guess what? The number two is going to get thrown at a lot more and he's going to give up some plays. That's going to happen. Like the opposing team is going to throw probably for 250 to 320 yards, you know, hopefully on the lesser side, just about every game. So somebody's going to be giving up some completions, and there are going to be times where that is Eric Stokes. But what I'm looking for from Eric is, did he get back to the peak of his speed and physical ability? And so far, my answer is an unequivocal yes. He looks like speedy rookie Eric Stokes, and he looks like he's playing as fast and as strong as he ever has. The next thing I was looking at was confidence. You know, you miss all of that time in 22 and 23, didn't play all that well when you did play. Was he going to come in and play with the confidence and swagger that you have to have in the NFL as a corner? The answer, once again, was an unequivocal yes. And I just love the way that he's playing. He's playing his brand of football. This is another player who the scheme just fits him much, much better. We're seeing, I think, the results of that. And maybe I was just wrong from day one, but I went from somebody being like, I have no expectations and don't know what to expect from Eric Stokes to he is the clear, unquestioned number two corner right now. For now, I'm not saying Carrington can't make that a competition at some point. I'm not saying Eric couldn't struggle at some point this year, but right now he is the clear, unquestioned number two corner. He has earned it. He deserves it. And I'm excited to see if he can get back to playing at the level that he was even showing his rookie year, if not better than that. And if he can, that is a massive win for this team. And I think Eric deserves a ton of credit for the rehab, the time, effort, and energy he put into getting back to the same speed and physical ability that he had prior to all the injuries and just go out and play his brand of football. And that's what we've seen. And that's why he won easily to me that number two corner spot. Number two, Devontae Wyatt. It's another one. I'm going to echo the same sentiments that I talked about with Quay Walker. Am I telling you that he's going to come in and be a Pro Bowl defender living up to the first round reputation, be a completely disruptive monster at the line of scrimmage? Not saying that. But do I think that he fits a lot better in this scheme? Oh, hell yeah. Do I think that Matt LaFleur echoed those sentiments when he said that Devontae fits amazing in this defense and has had, amazing or some form of that offseason? Yeah, you can tell. You can tell he's hungry. You can tell he's motivated. And here's the thing with Devontae. There's never been a question of his unique ability. There are few players, there are few humans that can move the way he moves as a disruptive defensive tackle at his size. It is a unique, unique thing, and it is special. Now, can he just hone in all that energy and all that athletic ability and go out and make consistent plays? And the second thing is, he was constantly getting into the backfield and causing disruption, even in a defense that wasn't made for that. But he didn't finish a lot of those plays. So the big next step for him is continuing with that disruption, which should even be more on a defense that's actually asking him to do it and allowing him to do it. And now, can he be the playmaker? Can he finish those plays? Because if so, this can be a double-digit sack guy. I legitimately mean that. If you told me that Devontae Wyatt ended with, 12 sacks this year, I'd be like, I think that is well within the realm of reason. I don't expect it. I'm not saying he's going to, but I think that is very possible for a player that has his ability, that can get into the backfield, make those plays, be a disruptor, and they're asking him and specifically telling him to go do that. They're going to set him up for success in this defense. And that's what I've seen. In this defense, I think we all like all of these pass rush guys, right? Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, Kingsley Enagbare, LVN, Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden, TJ Slayton. That is a really good group of 9 guys that you can mix and match and rotate around and keep guys fresh. But we need somebody to really step up and show that they can be a consistent disruptor. I think we all have Rashawn Gary penciled in as 1A on that list, but I want to see Devontae Wyatt get to the point where he can be 1B and that you are constantly getting disruption from a couple different guys on that front line. And if Wyatt can make that type of jump, it would be unbelievable for this team and what this defense can accomplish. But I've seen a lot of steady and exciting progress, and now it's just, can he put it all together and have an unbelievable season that I think we all know he's capable of? Now he just has to go out and show it. And then last but not least, number one on my list, I spoiled this a little bit the other day when I talked to Perry on our awards list, but it's Rashid Walker. And again, Bill Huber kind of was the first one to put this on his best, I think, performer of training camp, or at least something to that extent. And I just think he's right. I think Rashid Walker has been pretty unbelievable in his, quest to become the long-term full-time left tackle for Green Bay. And, losing David Bakhtiari last year was clearly not ideal. And then you came in and Rashid immediately got that spot. And then he rotated with Yash, and early on it looked not great. It looked like he was going to be okay, but he didn't necessarily look like he was a true starting caliber NFL tackle. And by the second half of last year, he looked like a true, legitimate starting left tackle with no question about it. But there's still a difference between being, maybe the 20 to 25th best starting left tackle. That's still a starting left tackle. That's a solid player. And being a legitimately good, maybe top 10 to 12 left tackle in the league. And I think that's where Rashid Walker has the ability to be. He has just slowed the game down entirely. He looks so natural out there at left tackle. It's looking easier and easier for him. I'm not sure it's quite to the just set it and forget it, David Bakhtiari. There are a few in the history of the NFL that have ever got to that point, right? But I feel so comfortable with Rashid Walker protecting Jordan Love's blind side. Just think back to 365 days ago. If I would have told you, yep, it's going to be up to Rashid Walker to be the one that's protecting his blind side, you'd have been like, oh, whew. You know, at the point, you were looking at probably Bakhtiari and Yash Nyman ahead of him. And you're thinking, you're down to your third left tackle, like former seventh round pick. Like, is that really going to be something that Green Bay can succeed with? And not only do I think that Rashid Walker has the ability to be somebody that you can succeed with, I think he has the ability to be somebody that you can succeed because of. I really think that he can get to that level. So a big step for Rashid Walker, becoming a big time starting left tackle in this league. He looks fantastic. I'm hoping that that carries over into the regular season. And it looks like he is really taking a jump. And again, this is another player where Matt LaFleur has echoed those same sentiments as well about how the game has kind of slowed down for him, the time, effort, and energy that he's put in, the attention to detail, the tape watching. And when you become a pro's pro at that position, when you've got all the athletic traits, when you already show that you can be a good one, now you can become a great one. And I think that's where Rashid Walker is trending as we get into this season. So the 12 players that I think have shown the most improvement either from last year to this year, or just through the course of this offseason: number 12, Jacob Monk; 11, Eric Wilson; 10, Aaron Mosby; 9, Malik Heath; 8, Quay Walker; 7, Isaiah McDuffie; 6, Sean Ryan; 5, Kadeem Telfert; 4, Jair Alexander; 3, Eric Stokes; 2, Devontae Wyatt; and number 1, Rashid Walker. That is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you guys so freaking much. It is game week. We will talk a lot more Packers Eagles tomorrow. And as we get into the remainder of this week, should be a really fun one. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All Pro members: Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Broadad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handel, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinosa, Peter Ataka, Caleb Cookster, SoCal Pack, Dan Gesford, Love and Football, and Jay Zimmerman. I will see you guys tomorrow. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.